Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. In Chicago, former President Trump has been indicted on four felony counts that accuse him of working to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election. Special Counsel Jack Smith.
Today, an indictment was unsealed, charging Donald J. Trump with conspiring to defraud the United States, conspiring to disenfranchise voters, and conspiring and attempting to obstruct an official proceeding.
CBS's Robert Costa.
Sources tell CBS News former President Trump's legal team is now mapping out a new strategy to push back on the charges, shifting blame onto lawyers who were advising him at the time of the aftermath of the 2020 election.
This is the third criminal case brought against the former president as he aims to reclaim the White House. Reaction to the indictment is pouring in.
I'm Matt Piper. The Trump campaign said in a statement that the indictment was, quote, the latest corrupt chapter in the continued pathetic attempt by the Biden crime family and their weaponized Department of Justice to interfere with the 2024 presidential election. But his former vice president, Mike Pence, says today's indictment serves as an important reminder anyone who puts himself over the Constitution should never be president of the United States. U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland.
Mr. Smith and his team of experienced, principled, career agents and prosecutors have followed the facts and the law wherever they lead.
Fitch Ratings Agency has downgraded the U.S.'s long-term foreign currency ratings, pointing to expected fiscal deterioration over the next 3 years and the rising general government deficit. But PNC chief economist Gus Fauché says
the U.S. economy is in very solid shape right now. It's continuing to grow. The labor market is very strong.
And Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says the downgrade is based on outdated data. We're learning more about the man who police say tried to enter a Jewish school with a gun in Memphis, Tennessee yesterday. The alleged gunman has been identified as a former student at the Margolin Hebrew Academy. He remains in critical condition after being shot by police. Assistant Memphis Police Chief Don Crow.
I personally truly believe that we have avoided a tragedy. I think this suspect was going to harm somebody before the day was over.
Another former student tells our CBS affiliate that the suspect had struggled for years with mental health problems. A French military transport plane carrying Europeans out of Niger has landed in France. The evacuation flight comes nearly a week after a coup in Niger. France, Italy, and Spain have all announced evacuations for their citizens and other European nationals. U.S. State Department spokesman Matthew Miller says,
at this time, we do not have indications of threats to U.S. citizens or facilities, but we are continually reevaluating our posture to ensure the safety of our citizens.
This is CBS News.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring system helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Cash was demanded. A Milwaukee bank teller complied. But within moments, police were able to chase down the suspects and recover about $10,000 yesterday. It happened at a U.S. bank on 56th and Capitol. The suspects are aged 25 and 22. Charges are pending. Tuesday night lights welcomed in fall football.
Grafton High School's football team started their football season this morning with their traditional midnight practice. August 1st is the earliest teams can start practicing according to WIAA rules. The players and families in Grafton gathered after hours for the celebration, grilling out and watching the practice until 1 a.m. The team has been doing these midnight practices since 2018.
The state DOT is leading the planning for the future of 794, holding public hearings on redesign options today and tomorrow. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup.
Yes, that's awesome.
Starting at 6 AM, Up North News, 8 to 10, The Earl Ingram Show. Mondays, 8 to 9, Under the Helmet with the Grave Digger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dominic Crute. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show. On 540 AM. FM WAUK.
She's the newest of seven elected Wisconsin Supreme Court justices. Janet Protasiewicz begins her 10-year term in August when she is sworn in. It's a longtime tradition which includes use of the court's seal created in 1848. But did you know it features the scales of justice, but not carried by a blindfolded Greek goddess? Instead, a hand holds the scales, representing justice is in human hands. It also means everything is official once the seal is stamped on any court documents. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr. Flowers, vegetables, and crab apples, some of the first Marathon County Fair attractions, and showed us proof those crops could grow there. Started in 1868 by the Agricultural Society, the Wisconsin Valley Fair in Wausau began as a place to buy and sell those types of goods. Today, it's considered one of the best in the state, featuring displays, demos, and big-name entertainment included with the price of your ticket. The Wisconsin Valley Fair runs August 1st to the 6th in Wausau. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
Bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So another sad kind of day. I grew up in Cleveland. Ohio is my home. And to see them go just kind of crazy. I mean, politically, really losing their mind. When I lived in Ohio, they were saying, you had John Glenn, you had Howard Metzenbaum. They weren't crazy. Now I look at drunk with power, gerrymandered like you wouldn't believe, and arrogant, which is why I guess on August 8th, there's a special election going to make it harder for people to amend the state's constitution. This is curious to me, and here to share some thoughts on why this is such an important issue that we have to have a special election in the beginning of August. I don't get it, but that's why I've asked David Pepper to come talk with us. He's the former chairman of the Ohio Democratic Party, also the author of Laboratories of Autocracy, a wake-up call from behind the lines. David, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you. Good to be back with you.
So why? Let's start with why. Why is this so important that you have to have a special election? This couldn't wait?
I mean, when I wrote this book, you just mentioned it, Laboratories of Autocracy, a wake-up call from behind the lines. This is what I was talking about. This is what I was trying to warn people about. They can't wait because they know they would lose if they don't change the rules. There is a November constitutional amendment that, like Kansas and Kentucky and Michigan last year, would protect a woman's right to choose in Ohio and basically rid ourselves of that ban that sent that 10-year-old rape victim in Indiana late last summer to everyone's horror. Well, they know that that would win here. Ohio is about 60%, just south of 60% pro-choice. Every poll shows that. They know that. And so when they saw the signatures being gathered, they thought, well, just like they gerrymandered, just like they suppressed the vote, how can we change the rules in order to actually win even when we're in the minority? And so that's why they're doing this, to raise the threshold to 60% from 50%. But this has implications way beyond even that, as important as that is. This would cut off our ability to do other types of reforms down the road, like ending the crazy illegal gerrymandering that they are still taking advantage of, potentially raising wages down the road. And they also view this as a part of a national strategy. If they can do this in Ohio, they will try and do it in every single state they can, because when you're running your whole extremist operation through gerrymandered state houses, where you've hijacked these state houses, basically, the one thing that you don't want to stop you is the people of these states saying, time out, we see what we're doing, we're going to stop you. By changing the threshold this way and scaring their voters into thinking that there's some, you know, liberal outside groups that are trying to take over Ohio, which is not the case, not the history, either recent or long term, this is their way of trying to protect what is a strategy basically run through gerrymandered and extremist state houses to run an extremist agenda here, which they know they can never get done in Washington.
Now, I want to go back
it's
to this.
Big, it's historic and it's national in its implications.
Right. I want to go back because I want to make sure I make this point that these special elections, these people banned this and have now brought it back over their own ban.
Correct. And here's how bad it is. I was talking to a reporter earlier today, and this reporter said, well, they repealed the ban, right? I was like, no, they didn't. They tried to repeal the ban. They didn't have the votes to repeal their own ban on August election. So they showed our state and anyone else paying attention that they knew the ban foreclosed an August special election. And by the way, the person leading the charge on this August special election, the day they banned August special election, said, I've spent my entire career getting to this important day where we get rid of August special elections. But the minute this abortion access referendum comes along, they forget. They don't forget their ban. They try to repeal it. They fail to repeal it. And then they say, well, forget the ban anyway. We're just going to demand it. And of course, we now have this hyperpartisan Supreme Court, which 4-3 said, that's fine. You guys are allowed to have an election on a day that the Ohio Revised Code says there should be no August special election. So here's how bad it is. This is a legislature seated in districts that violate the Ohio Constitution, not by me, but per the Ohio Supreme Court. So they're already illegitimate if you view the Ohio Constitution and how they should have done districts. Demanding an election on a day that's illegal to have that election, to try and rig the rules to get in front of something that would otherwise reflect the will of the Ohio people, but that would also long-term stop our ability to fix the gerrymandering and everything else. So if we saw this happening in some other country, as America, we would all say, my God, the democracy of that country and the rule are gone. It's happening right now in the state of Ohio. And I still think we treat it as far too normal for what it really is, which is lawless and undemocratic as hell and cynical as hell, because they literally are saying to the Ohio through TV ads, this is about outside special interests trying to buy Ohio's Constitution. This entire thing is being funded by a billionaire from Illinois who helped fund January 6th. So the whole thing is a out-of-state special interest driven change to Ohio's Constitution to lock the people of Ohio out of their own constitution.
Well, I mean, the right has always been masterful at accusing the other side of doing what they're actually doing. So I am not surprised by this, but in any way, shape, or form. But, you know, in looking at this, because this is scary stuff, and this could spread to other states if they can get away with this. Where do you see it going?
It'll be everywhere. I mean, I just was going over a sort of a speech that was given by one of these far right leaders. He said that. He said, this person said, I'm going to send something on this tomorrow. He said to a group earlier this year, we're 0-6 in the states that have had a referendum since Roe. We can't win. We will lose in Ohio. We have to change to 60% or we will keep losing. And if we do that, we can stop it here, meaning protecting a woman's right to choose. We can stop it everywhere. They know that this is a national test case. And if the mess, and what are they messaging on? They're messaging on the same old, this is about parental rights. That has almost nothing to do with issue one. But they're taking the biggest boogeyman they can think of, throwing it into this campaign. And so they are testing. And again, not to keep talking about a book I wrote, but my book is called Laboratories of Autocracy, partly because they are always learning from their test cases. Yeah. And so if this does happen in Ohio, any state where they can, citizens have the right to change their constitutions, which is most states, they will, I guarantee you, bring this 60% threshold to those states. And they will say to those states, look, Ohio did it because they wanted to protect their constitution. So absolutely, this will go national. And in their own meetings, they tell each other that.
No, it's amazing when you put it the way you did. And look, they're honest. I give them credit. They're honest with what their plans are. this was supposed to be about states' rights. I mean, when the federal government said, you know, we're going to overturn Roe, it was going to go back to the states, and everyone thought, hey, we're going to go back and we're going to organize in the states, and the majority is going to win. And here they are again, rigging the game.
Yeah, I mean, it really is ironic that the Dobbs decision, as flawed as it was, said this will take it back to sort of the majesty of democracy in states, and the people will decide. Well, now we see that these rigged legislators they gerrymander because they're afraid of the people. They know their extremism will not survive the people voting in fair districts. But now they're taking it to a different level. They're essentially, in this case, this is sort of a gerrymander of a statewide referendum. Change the rules so that if you're in the minority, you lose. So they are literally, these are people who probably would praise Kavanaugh or whoever it was part of that Dobbs majority. In this case, they're not even following what the Dobbs decision said, which is it should go back to the people, the states decide. They are doing everything in their power, everything to avoid the majority of Ohioans weighing in on this, which was, as you said, supposed to be what even the Dobbs decision said should happen. They want this decided by rigged extremists and gerrymandered districts in a way that the people of a state, even in this case, 59 or 60% of them agreeing that a woman should have a right to choose, 90% of them disagreeing with a ban that has no exceptions for rape or incest. 90% disagree with the current abortion ban, and they want to say, sorry, we get to do it, and the people of this state don't get to weigh in. And there's another part of this, by the way, I won't go through all the details. There's a poison pill in this thing beyond the 60%. They're creating a rule that to get something on the ballot, you have to have a threshold of signatures in all 88 counties, which would give any single county in Ohio a veto over the other 87, over, let's say, 70% Ohioans want something. Well, one county with 0.15% of the state could stop it. That also is an invitation for meddling in signature gathering. You know, the current massive scandal that just led to federal sentences for that corrupt energy bill in Ohio, one of the key aspects of that scandal that led to jail sentences was an effort to interfere with the signature gathering process. Well, they are creating this massive bottleneck that if you successfully meddled with the signature gathering in a few small counties, if in just one county you managed to stop the signature gathering process successfully, there wouldn't even be an election at all. So this is really an effort. A Republican attorney general, a former one, who is running against this issue, siding with my view on it, has called this a sort of a conspiracy to kill these things from even happening in the first place by giving every single county in Ohio a veto over the other 87 moving forward in election. That's how bad and cynical this thing is.
No, it's crazy. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with David Pepper. David's a former chairman of the Ohio Democratic Party and author of Laboratories of Autocracy, A Wake-Up Call from Behind the Lines. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at this. You know, I keep hearing, every time you come on, you keep telling me how bad my state is, my former state has become. And I keep coming back to, I know people in Ohio. I know that they're decent. They're hardworking. I know a lot of really good people. And you go, when do they have enough? When does that throw the bum out sentiment? You know, when does that take hold? Because every time I talk to you, something crazier, worse is popping up.
I mean, we're sort of a bellwether now. We were a bellwether in terms of how we voted nationally. We're a bellwether now about how a hijacked state house can sort of just warp a state and not reflect the people of that state. We're still a lean red state. I'm not going to tell you that we're a blue state. A good candidate can win in a good year like Sherrod or Barack Obama. We're a lean red by a few points state, but we're not a crazy right-wing state. And what's happening in the state is, and it's happening all over, but we're a bellwether of this. Once you have a gerrymandered system, so the state reps to a person never feel any accountability in their entire careers, it stops being about the people you're talking about, the good people who kind of have common sense and a sense of moderation, who voted for John Glenn and then George Voinovich and then Bob Taft for governor. They kind of went both ways. Those people are pushed out of the picture when a state house basically is guaranteed to be reelected no matter how crazy they are because of gerrymandering. So it's an entity unto itself. And the reason they want to up the percentage to 60% is to get the people you're talking about from ever being able to stop the insanity we're seeing in the state house. So, you know, Kansas, again, we think of Kansas as conservative, right? Well, they rejected abortion ban. They're 60-40. That's a bat signal to the country. Don't, in a blue state, assume that the people of these states are going along with the program of these crazy legislatures. These legislatures gerrymander. They change the rules to get to 60% because they know full well that their extremism does not reflect the people of these states. We might have a Republican legislature if we had fair districts. I'll acknowledge that. But it wouldn't be a Republican legislature acting like this. They would reflect the more mainstream. You know, what's Ohio support? We support our unions big time. We support a woman's right to choose big time. We support a middle-class based economy. We want some common sense gun reform. Every poll shows that those things are all very popular. If you didn't have gerrymandering, you might have a slightly right-leaning legislature, but it would generally reflect those views as opposed to the exact opposite again and again and again. And that's why I think the people in these states that are hyper-gerrymandered, think of them as hijacked governments by these right-wing extremists who are nationally running the show. Gerrymander, suppress the vote of the other side, run an extreme agenda through, and if someone gets in the way, be it another office holder, be it a state court, that was what Morvey Harper about, or in this case, be it the people themselves, do everything you can to strip power away from the threat to that gerrymandered state house. So the people of the states are literally being dealt out of their own governance in their states.
So last question I've got for you in this last week, anything our audience can do, anything that you're telling people to do, what are the marching orders to stop this nonsense?
I mean, if you're on Twitter, honestly, this is going to sound self-serving. Follow me at David Pepper, because I'm giving, as you probably see, nonstop updates. We had about 65,000 absentee ballots that were in at homes last Thursday that hadn't been returned. So I put out a call to action. Help me reach these voters. We put together a digital program. We reached all these voters, and already 30,000 of those ballots have come in. We've reached almost all 60,000 with repeated reminders to get their votes in. Today, we see the right wing buy $5 million in TV ads to close out the week with these scare tactic ads. Anything people can do to respond there. But forget that for a second. If you're in Ohio, vote early. Get everyone you know to vote early. If you're outside of Ohio, talk to Ohioans you know. But this is a case where a phone bank from anywhere, a text message from anywhere, postcards, I think we've run out of time for that. If you haven't done that yet, it's too late, although many have sent postcards. It's a low turnout election still. And any vote you prompt to show up and vote no could be the difference. So any way you can help there. And if you follow me at David Pepper, I'm giving a lot of those tips in the final week. And we've had good early vote numbers. The polling's pretty decent. But as I try and remind people, they are always underwater in the polls. That shapes everything they do. That's why they gerrymander. That's why they want the 60%. So when they're down to the polls with a week to go, what do? They run insane ads to scare their base to show up. They overperform through scaring people. And so no one should take anything for granted. They're always down in the polls, and they always come up with strategies to overcome that. That's sort of their whole MO. So anything people, and one other thing, as much as it's fitting that Donald Trump is indicted today, folks, you're not going to change anything that happens in that trial the next couple of weeks. You're not. We can all watch it, enjoy it, whatever. But what's happening in Ohio with democracy, you have more control over than anything that happens there. So watch it for a few hours. I did as well. But we got work to do here for next Tuesday. And I beg you, if you care about this issue, don't let that distract you. You can't control that. But you can help us control the outcome of a low turnout race. It will have national implications. And if the wrong side is successful, they will bring this model to every single state where they can. So anything you can do to help out, we really, really appreciate.
There you go. David, I appreciate the time as always. Keep up the great work, and I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thanks. Take care. Thanks for having me on.
David Pepper, former chair of the Ohio Democratic Party. Also, make sure you check out his book, Laboratories of Autocracy, A Wake-Up Call from Behind the Lines. I'm going to take a quick break. Back with your thoughts after this. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. I'm the talk.
We We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Yeah, states' rights, my behind. Again, I go back to election night 2016. And a conservative friend at the time said, it's going to be interesting to watch liberals become states' rights people. And look, we got to defend the states' rights at this point because they're trying to take even that. Let's go to the phones. Got Jack from Wisconsin on line one. Jack, how we doing?
Yes, peachy keen, thank you. I just wanted to mention Ohio may be gerrymandered seriously. Wisconsin is probably one of the worst, if not the worst, gerrymandered states. From 48% of the vote, our legislature is almost, fortunately not quite, two-thirds Republican, about 65% Republican. And they have rammed through their agenda repeatedly. Fortunately, we have a Democratic governor who has been able to veto most of the stuff. He vetoed the gerrymander and the state Supreme Court, in violation of his constitutional veto power, overruled the maps that had been originally drawn, and they gave the Republicans the maps they asked for. I mean, this is just, fortunately, we have a changeover in our Supreme Court. We have a new justice who is pretty seriously committed to following legal remedies rather than a political agenda in the court. But give you an example. State legislature rammed through a budget, and the first thing that they did was to give about $3 billion out of the $7 billion surplus that we had to the very richest in terms of a tax break.
Of course.
And the second thing that they did was to give private school welfare something like $3,000 additional per student, and they gave $300 additional per student to the public schools. But the catch with that is that the public schools didn't actually get it out of the budget surplus. They have to get a referendum and pass a referendum to even get that $300.
Jeez.
Fortunately, the governor vetoed the huge tax cut for the wealthy, but the rest of the stuff pretty much went through the Republican way.
Amazing, amazing stuff. Jack, I appreciate the call. You know, again, you know, you listen to this stuff and it's infuriating that this has been allowed to happen and this has been allowed to go on. But look, you know, Ohio, again, you know, Ohio, you know, I still think is a little worse because they control virtually every level of government. And this referendum that they're running through, it's really just it's amazing. Let's go to the phones. We got Lewis on line two. Lewis, how are we doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good, Rick. How are you doing?
I'm fabulous. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to say, first and foremost, you know, I have just been pumped listening to this show tonight because it really motivates me to become more optimistic about our future, and everything you're saying tonight really is hitting home. You know, the importance of getting out here and support our workers. Which side are you on, right? You've been telling us this over and over again, how it is important that we become active, and this is the time. You know, you got strikes happening all over the country. You know, things are getting done with, like you said, with President Biden, with all of his agenda. And people need to realize that, right? And also what you've been saying is Democrats have to come up with better messaging. There, you know, there's not a time more perfect for that than right now.
Yep.
And if they don't, then that's a big tragedy. But I also just want to say one other thing real quick is, you know, as I'm listening to you, my mom would be so happy if she heard this, you know, show, because she was an ardent labor activist. You know, she passed away 2 weeks ago.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear
that. I'm telling you, she was sitting here listening to your show. She would be smiling from ear to ear because she was a English teacher back in my hometown of Philadelphia. She eventually ended her career as the vice president of the teachers union down there. And she was really, really ardent. She was.
I want to make mom happy.
Anyone?
Lewis, I appreciate the call, man. I got to go.
Yeah, no problem. Go ahead.
Thank you, brother. And look, it's all about making mom happy. I thank you. That makes me really happy. Back after this.
This is Labor History in Two. This day in labor history, the year was 1917. Frank Little, an activist for the Industrial Workers of the World, or Wobblies, was lynched near Butte, Montana. His beaten body was found hung off a railroad trestle. On it was pinned a disturbing note. It read, quote, "Others take notice. First and last warning. 3777 LDCSSWT. The numbers were the measurement of a grave. Each letter was the initial of a union organizer. The letter L for Frank Little was circled. The warning was clear. Union organizers leave town or die. Butte was copper mining country, and efforts to unionize the miners had turned the area into a battleground. Frank had arrived that July to help in the efforts to support striking miners. Frank Little was a leader of the IWW with experience organizing free speech campaigns, lumberjacks, and miners. Although not much is known of his early life, it is thought his mother was Cherokee and his father was a Quaker. He organized the wives of the miners to join in the pickets and helped build solidarity between the multiple unions that organized in the area. The Anaconda Mining Company took note of his presence, but could not find a legal means to stop him. Then, early on that fateful day, men came to his boarding house. They claimed they were police officers. They gagged Little and stuffed him into a car. They beat him and drug him through part of town tied to the car bumper. And it was at the county line where they hung Frank Little's body. News of the atrocity spread far and wide. Thousands attended the funeral. Not surprisingly, the authorities never found his murderers. Some doubt they ever tried. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
Little known fact, a leading cause of death in Texas is Governor Greg Abbott. Yes, by intentional actions and deliberate inactions, Abbott has used his gubernatorial policies to kill thousands of Texans, including his calculated refusal to extend health care to millions of poor Texans, including nearly a million children, his intentional denial of water breaks for outdoor workers broiling under this year's 100-degree-plus heat dome, his lethal deregulation of utilities, causing the state power grid to collapse for days in the deep freeze of 2021 with hundreds dying for lack of heat and water, and his shameful prioritizing of gun extremism over the lives of schoolchildren. These people are not dying accidentally, but are victims of Abbott's premeditated policies and political ambition. Consider his silly scheme of throwing $9.5 billion of Texas taxpayers' money into the ditch of his highly ballyhooed border security PR show. Grandiosely branded Operation Lone Star, it has posed Generalissimo Abbott as a right-wing border hero. Some hero, he has stretched miles of razor wire underwater in the Rio Grande, slashing the flesh of migrant families and trapping babies and pregnant women in the coils. And Abbott's state troopers have been commanded to shove exhausted and injured refugees back into the river toward Mexico. As one appalled trooper says, "We have stepped over a line into the inhumane." This willful cruelty is made ridiculous by the fact that Abbott's militaristic power play has totally failed to deter migration. After all, these families are fleeing for their lives and future, so he can wrap all of Texas in razor wire and they will still come and find a way in. This is Jim Hightower saying, Abbott can kill lots of them, but he can't kill the human spirit.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as I said earlier, the former guy, another indictment, number three. Does this number matter? I mean, I'm sure there's going to be a couple more before this is all said and done. And, you know, the years could pile up. I had another person email me and remind me that Nikki Haley will pardon him, which is why Republicans should get behind Nikki Haley, which, okay. I'm not quite sure why you would run on the pardon or do away with this or end all of it platform right now before we've seen anything. But, you know, politics is what it is. Here to share some thoughts on today's indictments, I've asked our good friend Bill Shearer to come talk with us. Bill is the politics editor over at Washington Monthly, WashingtonMonthly.com, the website. Bill, thanks for taking time for us.
Always a pleasure.
So any thoughts of the indictment? Any surprises today? Anything?
I can't say. I don't feel like I'm surprised by anything at this point. This is pretty well telegraphed. The evidence is obviously very strong. And we've already seen a great deal of capitulation amongst Trump's Republican rivals, very much in quotes, with people talking about how we should, DeSantis talking about weaponization of the Department of Justice, and Nikki Haley and Vivek talking about pardons. I mean, it does. I mean, there are obviously a few, Mike Pence indicated that this shows Trump should not be, that Trump put his personal fortunes over the Constitution.
Yeah.
Mr. Hutchinson wants him to drop out.
I want
to
hear nothing from Mike Pence. I mean, am I the only one who thinks that no courage points for you, no pat on the back, no positive check mark in history? Screw him. That's where my mind goes.
I put him one or two ticks above that.
Did you see his statement today?
Yeah.
You know, this idea that he's going to come out now and say, oh, well, he shouldn't be president and all of this, and I stand with the Constitution. Yeah, after you check with the guy who can't spell potato, then that gave you the courage to do what the Constitution told you to do. But only then, after you checked with Dan Quayle.
I mean, this is not perhaps the most important debate to be had, but You could still say, well, you did the bare minimum, but there are a whole lot of Republicans who are not doing the bare minimum.
I agree, but still not giving him any courage points. They tried to hang him.
I don't have to give him a Presidential Medal of Freedom or anything, but we do want a two-party system where both parties are respecting the basic rule of law.
Correct.
That doesn't mean I want to vote for a slew of Republicans, but I want them to do that bare minimum. You know, Mike Pence checked that box. Maybe he didn't check any boxes before January 6th, but he checked that box. You know, Chris Christie obviously did a whole lot of things I don't agree with, you know, before that point. Says a lot of things today I don't agree with, but he's checking that one box right now. And I do want to see more Republicans check that box so we can get back to some sense of normalcy again.
I agree.
I don't think they're winning the day in the Republican Party right now, because not enough Republicans are doing it. It's only a smattering of folks who are in any kind of position of influence. And Donald Trump has been very canny in how he's handled these indictments. He announces them. He announces the indictments before the indictments are formally announced. He puts his narrative on that announcement. He rallies his base in advance of the announcement. And it's basically a warning shot to any other Republican. If you're going to criticize me for this, you're going to feel my wrath and the wrath of my supporters. And that has worked.
Yep.
The vast majority of Republicans don't want to get crosswires with him. And that is, I mean, I can't know if there was any other timeline here that could have materialized, but in my mind, the only way you could have derailed Trump from this nomination is if a very broad swath of Republicans came out to say that he is toxic, that he is a loser, that he is dead weight for the Republican Party, that he is corrosive to the body politic. It can't just be one or two or three people. It's got to be a wide range of people. So it pierces that conservative media echo chamber. So enough rank and file Republicans say, yeah, you know, I kind of like that guy, but gee, you really does seem like dead on arrival on a general election. I guess we got to turn the page. That hasn't happened. And are you past the point of no return where it can happen?
Yeah. Now the thing that's interesting to me is you've got these co-conspirators unnamed, although I think everybody knows, you know, in wide ideas who they are: Giuliani, Sidney Powell, Eastman, Clark, you know, that group. Are you reading this like I am, that the reason that they were unnamed is maybe this is a call to the rats that it's time to jump the ship and maybe move in a direction of being able to get rid of Trump? Because what's interesting to me is no seditious conspiracy, no treason, none of the good stuff. These seem like lower charges to me.
Oh, I would imagine these are charges that would come with jail time if they actually...
Well, yeah, 55 years for the four of them. Yeah, there's jail time. Yeah. But it's not the big ones.
I mean, I'm not going to get picky here. I'm not a, you know, I'm not a lawyer, not a legal analyst. I don't claim to be a mind reader of what Jack Smith's about to do. I would think that not indicting others today is creating opportunities to approach them and say, if you cooperate, then maybe you'll get immunity and make it easier to convict Donald Trump. So we have to see what Jack Smith's next steps are. But that seems logical to me.
Yeah, for me, the question goes, you know, who's the rat? Will Rudy rat him out? You know, is Sidney Powell going to save her own skin? You know, the rest of them, you know, and I still want to know about my congressman. Scott, pardon me, Perry. I still want to know what his part in all of this. Could he be the guy who said, you know what, we use the Insurrection Act to put down anyone protesting against the insurrection? I use the military to do that, and the Insurrection Act. Could that be him?
Yeah. It is hard for me to comprehend why anybody would risk imprisonment to protect Donald Trump. Why would anyone make that calculation that was the moral, personally satisfying, utilitarian thing to do? I don't get it. But imagine part of the calculation they're going to make is, do we think we can get Trump to election day and Trump will win and he'll pardon us all? Is that a better path for us than being dragged as a traitor by the Republican rank and file and have to live with that for the rest of our lives? I would think being on the right side of history would be better, and being free would be the better choice. But if they somehow think Trump is, obviously Trump can win election. It's a competitive race for election.
Yep.
I wouldn't stake my freedom on it, but perhaps they'll make that choice.
Wow, there's a gamble, right? I mean, look, the gamble is supporting this guy anyway, because, you know, this is the thing that's always been curious to me, and this is going back to 2015, you know, because I remember talking to people who had been, you know, screwed over by him, you know, numerous times, you know, in the, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s, whenever, contractors and, you know, people who were, you know, who'd done work for him, that he just stiffed at every turn. And I'm going, who in their right mind would enter into any agreement with him? Because you know he's going to save himself and he's going to step on your head to do it. Why do people keep putting themselves in this? I mean, to your point, I don't get it.
I mean, why did Saddam Hussein not just tell everybody, I don't have WMD, don't invade me? Yeah, it's hard to get your head around why people don't make seemingly dead obvious decisions so they stay alive or stay free. But if you're in that bunker, if you're in that echo chamber, if you're getting validation from an insular group of people saying that sticking with Donald Trump is the just and a wise thing to do, then I guess you do it. But I mean, Giuliani is someone who's befuddling to me. Here's someone who could have been dining out on being Time Man of the Year for decades and chose the path of total infamy. So maybe once you've made that bet, you gotta ride to the bitter end.
Yeah, you gotta lay on that bed with your shirt untucked. Yeah, I got it. Yeah, I'm there with you. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show with Bill Scheer. Bill is the politics editor over at the Washington Monthly, WashingtonMonthly.com, the website. We'll get links on the social media. I can take a look at the great work that he does there. So anything in this surprising to you? I mean, I had a conversation with a friend earlier ago. Yeah, we knew all this stuff because we watched the January 6th hearings because they basically did all the work for the DOJ. Anything in here grab your attention? Shocking? Surprising?
Well, I haven't read every page, so forgive me for not being, you know, completely prepared. But I mean, the challenge for this kind of case, I thought, was, you know, proving that he knew what he was pursuing was fraudulent, because he could say, hey, I just thought I was pursuing my legal recourse. I thought that we had a legitimate reason to offer an alternative slate of electors and have that chance to be adjudicated. Don't blame me. That was mistaken. I was doing that in good faith. How do you prove otherwise? And again, not even going through every line of the indictment, I did catch him telling Mike Pence, "You're too honest." I mean, that's something that's very succinct, very clear. I mean, I suppose you could try to say, "Oh, I was kidding around." That was like a glib comment, but in the context of everything else, it's harder to argue it was some sort of throwaway comment, considering what he was being asked to do and what he actually did going forward. So it's those kinds of comments that I didn't know that Jack Smith actually had on the record.
Yeah, I'm interested to see, you know, all of the stuff that they've got, because I still think this has to be televised. I think it has to be on every network. I think it has to be. I think this has to be bigger than the OJ trial. Even if they got to break out the white Bronco or whatever they got to do, but this has got to be front and center, prime time viewing for every citizen, regardless of which side of this divide you're on, because I think we do need to know what happened and when and how and why and all of that. I think it has to be presented all across the board under oath. The important part, none of this, we're going to make stuff up in kangaroo courts, but under oath with the person who has the ability to throw your behind in jail for perjury. I think this has to happen.
I don't know what the rules are. If there's a presumption that a federal criminal trial gets televised, or if that's a case by case decision by the judge, I just don't know what the answer is to that.
Yeah, but I don't know how you can do this behind closed doors.
I mean, we're pretty accustomed to televised trials, but, you know, the sexual abuse trial, civil trial that Trump just had, you know, wasn't televised. So I remember, there's a
huge difference between that and this, though, Bill. I mean, you know, I
would horrible. Like it televised. I just don't know what the rules
yeah,
are.
I don't either. I'm just for me, there's a big difference. Yeah. You know, this is the, you know, the foundation of our country. How many years did we have a peaceful transfer of power? Like 250 years, something like that.
Something like that.
Out the window.
And, well, I mean, the upside of this, yeah, I'm of one to say, you know, the Constitution has held. Trump threw everything at the Constitution, every possible thing to destroy the foundation of democracy, our system of checks and balances, and it weathered that. A literal insurrection fomented by the president of the sitting president of the United States, and that could not stop the Constitution of the United States. That's how strong that document is. That's how strong the system is. So I'm a glass half full person in that regard. And the fact that he's being indicted now is further testament to that.
No, I will go there with you. And I you know, institutions held, I would argue barely, but held. And that is a good thing. So last question I've got for you, because clearly Trump has strong support with a good number of people in this country. Does this become, you know, what everyone fears? Do you think? Do you think we see, you know, insanity?
I mean, I'm not, I can't predict. I mean, it takes one person to do something horrible. You know, it takes one person to do something horribly violent. We've seen individuals do that in the name of Trump already in the past several years. And we saw a group of people do something like that on January 6th. So I can't put past anything past any one individual or group of people. But we're not, the system is not shirking from its duty despite that threat. It is going forward as it should. A crime was investigated, evidence was gathered, and indictments and trials will now proceed. That's what you want to see.
There you go. That is what I want to see. And I also want to see him in an orange jumpsuit being let off in shiny bracelets. But that's a whole nother day. But Bill, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff. Appreciate the work that you do over at the Washington Monthly. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
Always. Take care.
Good stuff. Our good friend Bill Scheer. Make sure you check out his work over at the Washington Monthly. WashingtonMonthly.com, the website. Gonna take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1938. At 8:30 in the morning, union members gathered at the port of Hilo, Hawaii. They were there to protest the docking of a ship with non-union workers. The SS Waiali Ali. The workers came from many unions, including the International Longshoremen and Warehousemen. 1938 was an intensive year for organizing on the Hawaiian docks. Estimates of crowds of workers gathering that day were as many as 800. The workers chanted, "The more we get together, 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 the more we get together, the better we'll be." They were met by police who used tear gas, fire hoses, bayonets, and bullets to break up the peaceful demonstration. Harry Kamaku, a Chinese Hawaiian labor leader, recounted what he saw, saying, "They shot us down like a herd of sheep. We didn't have a chance." The firing kept up for about 5 minutes. They just kept pumping buckshot and bullets into our bodies. They shot men in the back as they ran. They shot men who were trying to help wounded comrades and women. 50 people were injured due to this brutality. Fortunately, no one lost their life. The events at Hilo became a rallying cry for workers throughout the islands. Joe Ki'ali Alio, a longshoreman from Honolulu, recalled, "Now these guys would come down here from Hilo and they would mingle around and they would talk to us. They shared what they witnessed that day on the docks and then challenged the Honolulu workers to join the fight." The workers from Hilo said, "The Honolulu port has to organize. We can't do it alone." The University of Hawaii's Center for Labor Education and Research has developed a documentary about the events at Hilo as part of their Rice and Roses series. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in Two. So I saw the creepiest picture that I think I've seen in a very long time. The Independent. They're a news organization. I think out of the UK, actually. They got a picture of Sarah Huckabee Sanders, which is creepy enough. She's, and I'm sure a lot of people, I'm sure you've seen this photo. She's big, cheesy grin with the legislation that she signed to, you know, do away with work permits for kids. So, you know, yeah, kids can go get jobs now without, you know, any oversight, without any problem. We're gonna put kids back in, you know, back into the meat packing plants, get them back to work, you know, like Newt Gingrich wanted, you know, cleaning the Johns, fire those union janitors and get those kindergartners in there. They got small hands, toothbrushes, clean around the toilet, really nice. But the picture with her, this big cheesy, you know, hey, look what I did kind of smile, and is surrounded by five kids who, they don't look happy. They're actually frowning as this new labor policy goes into place that's going to let these kids, you know, back into dangerous jobs and, you know, doing all kinds of stupid stuff. Now, look, I'm not against kids working. Trust me, I worked from the time I was 8 years old until today. I fully want kids to learn the value of a dollar. Sorry, though, lumber mills, meat packing plants, anywhere where their alcohol is served. Yeah, I just no. The fast food joint, for a couple hours here or there, fine. But, this idea that if kids under 16 don't have to get work permits, crazy. But she's thrilled about it. And there are these not smiling children. So I did this weird thing because we talked about this yesterday. An Asian woman put her photo into one of those AI magic machines and said, hey, make my photo look more professional. Well, I took the photo of these children and put them in the AI magic machine. Now, I'm not going to publish them. This was for my own interest to see what the AI machine would come up with. And, tell me what a child laborer in America looks like. It didn't look like any of the smiling white children. No, they were more of a brownish complexion. Definitely not these kids, but these kids weren't thrilled either. And it's one of those things where we know who they're going after with child labor. We know who their targets are. It's poor kids. It's poor minority kids. There's no more prison school to prison pipeline now. So now we just need to get them from the school to job pipeline, and the sooner the better. And this is where my problem is of where we're at. And look, the reality is the climate's getting worse. It's getting hotter. Kids, they can adapt a lot better. which is why when I saw the Washington Post story that said your body can build up a tolerance to heat, here's how, my mind went, are you freaking kidding me? Small gradual exposure to heat can help the human body build tolerance to rising temperatures, according to experts. Start off small. This is how you ease into it. Go outside for a couple minutes, do a little exercise, and then move around and listen to your body when it tells you it's too hot. Rest a little, and then do a little bit more tomorrow. Because screw doing anything about the climate. You're just going to have to adapt. You're just going to have to get used to being hot. So lean in. And look, the sooner we get kids adapted to the heat, because, they're just sitting in the air conditioning playing video games, sooner we can get them out into those hot factories and doing that, the better for them. It's actually better for them. My mind went to Rex Tillerson, former Exxon head. Rex was questioned about climate change. And he said, look, there's no doubt climate change is real. It's no doubt that it's coming. It's just that we believe that we can adapt. With technology, we'll figure it out. And we can charge you for air and water and air conditioning and all that stuff. I'm going to make them a lot of money. And my mind went to this place where this is the Rex Tillerson way to deal with climate change. This is how they're going to get kids adapting early. Make sure that they're used to being in the heat. No more air conditioning in school. That should be a piece of legislation. Got to get them used to the future climate. Now, here's the thing. If we're talking about, the heat, I guess we got to talk about, hurricane winds, how we can build up an immunity to hurricane winds. Maybe be a little heavier. Maybe carry around chains or something to tie ourselves to things. Be prepared. Flooding, maybe we start teaching kids how to swim sooner. There's all kinds of ways to adapt to the climate crisis that is coming. Droughts. We could all become camels, have humps on our back, store water. This is the future. Never mind actually doing anything to stop the damage. Never mind. We can adapt. And this is the kind of insanity. Thank you, Washington Post. I needed a story to tell me how incrementally we get used to the rising temperatures. Don't wear shorts anymore if you live in Phoenix, because you might fall and get burnt. Hey, don't go to Florida if you want to you know, jump in cool water, because the water temperature was 100 degrees. Who needs hot tubs when you could just go to the beach? This is the world that they're taking us towards. But just ease into the heat. Ease into it. 10, 15 minutes a day the first day. And then you just add 5 minutes every day after that. Really simple. So the heat's just in your head. You just have to get used to it. Never mind what all those climate people say. Don't worry about it. Just ease into it.
You're listening to The Shaw. WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.